Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
Where are all the gutless American wrestlers? Step in the ring with the Baron and face the brave.
The reason why X and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining us today. I have a one-of-a-kind episode for you. I'm having a WWA Bruiser Bedlam reunion. I will be joined later on by Jerry Graham Jr., Chris Carter, Calypso Jim, Rex Bodie, Gary Warnchak, and Terry Sullivan. This is by far the largest interview I've ever done, and it was very ambitious, and I think it went great. It some great stories, some exciting interaction for these guys. Some of these guys haven't seen or talked to each other for many, many years, so it was cool to see them interact and tell these stories. Now, I do an introduction at the beginning with each of the guys so that you can hopefully tell who's who as the conversation carries on. But if you need or want more than that, I do have the video version of this interview. It is on my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/TheDaveDynasty, or you can just look for Nostalgic Dave Dynasty on YouTube. And I'll also put a link in the episode notes so that you can easily get there. That way, if you want to see everybody as the interview is going on, you can go to that and watch it. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and follow on social media. The podcast is available on all podcast platforms. Make sure you share, subscribe, follow, rate, review, do all those fun things. Follow me on Twitter or X at The Dave Dynasty. Like I mentioned earlier, subscribe to my YouTube channel. And you can financially support the show by buying a shirt at prowrestlingtees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now remember, before we dive into everything, to join the Wrestling Fans International Organization at the WFIA.org. And you can also join the WFIA Facebook group. Those are two separate things, so make sure you do both. Check out the Ultimate Classic Wrestling channel at classicwrestling.net or download the app on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, iOS, and Android Mobile. Great value there. Lots of great content on there. So join that now. And as mentioned last episode, Wrestling Nostalgia is part of the WrestleCopia family of shows. Check out all the great shows with great hosts that shine a light on wrestling history. Go to WrestleCopia.com or look up the shows on any podcast platform. So because of how great this interview is that I have on today's episode, and also the length, it's a little longer than some of my usual interviews, I'm not going to do a special segment this week. We're just going to get right to it. So, without any further delay, let's take a break, and when we come back, we will have that gigantic Bruiser Bedlam reunion interview, so stick around. This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend, Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider.
Welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. And this episode, we're going to try something very special. We're either going to hit or miss here. We're going to see how this goes. This is a one-of-a-kind event. This is a WWA Bruiser Bedlam reunion featuring several of the most prominent alumni from the promotion's run. This should be fun. should be full of great stories, and some of these guys haven't had a chance to speak to each other in several years. So let me introduce everybody real quick before we get going. Of course, right there, right beside me, Dr. Jerry Graham Jr., the most highly educated man in professional wrestling.
Hello, everybody.
Right beside him, Chris Carter. He's either the spirit of America or an international freedom fighter. We'll see which one today. And then down there, we've got Bobo Brazil Jr., formerly known as Calypso Jim, a true fan favorite and a legend of pro wrestling and super sharp dressed. Hey, Bo.
Hello, everybody.
And then right there, man, I dug him. I dug him out. I had to go all the way to Cut and Shoot, Texas to find him. The baddest man, Cowboy Rex Bodie.
And his horse, graduated. How's Prairie Moon doing?
I shot her years ago, man.
Uh-oh. Her business was bad. You had to eat her. Is that right?
That's how it got.
And then next to him, the longtime voice of Bruiser Bedlam and Detroit Wrestling, Terry Sullivan. Terry, how are you?
I'm great.
And then last but certainly not least, a former promoter, on-air Bedlam authority figure, and a public servant, Gary Warrenchak. Gary, how are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this should be fun. Before we dive into this too far-fetched, Jerry, let me put you on the spot initially here. So before we get too far into this, we may have some listeners who may not be quite familiar with what Bruiser Bedlam exactly is. So just in case they're not, Jerry, since this was your thing, why don't you bring them up to speed?
Okay, well, many of the fans that study wrestling history know that around 1964, Dick the Bruiser and Wilbur Snyder began a WWA wrestling promotion, which was strictly independent. They didn't belong to the NWA, WWF, or anything. And it was one of the best promotions ever because during that period of time, from the early 60s to the early 80s, the best talent in the country would go through there. I don't have a time to list them all. But believe me, Bruno Sammartino, Andre the Giant, they were all there. And then, you know, everything has a shelf life. I was there early in its heyday as just what they call a job guy. I wasn't important to the territory, but I was there and I got to be a part of it in a smaller kind of a way. But then things started, you know, we did well. But then in the 80s, you know, like I said, the shelf life came in and it wasn't looking good. But it was Herodotus that said, circumstances rule men. Men don't rule circumstances. I was approached by a group in Detroit that wanted to do pro wrestling, and they had a kind of a novel idea. They wanted Dick the Bruiser, within the contents of the storyline, to be searching the world for the new young talent and have Terry Sullivan, who I will say right now is as good as or better than any other commentator in the world, be his color commentator. And together they would introduce this new talent, and they kept some old talent on as well. And we started at the Premier Center in Detroit and ended up at the Sofitel in Toledo. And we had a very, very, very successful run. And I'm going to just say one more thing, and then I'm not going to tie up the thing. We began and we finished as a profitable promotion. We made money. Every show I put money back into an account. So we had a lot of money saved for an emergency. You know, you have a show where you don't quite make the nuts, you can pay everybody with no pressure. And we did very well. Our second to last promotion was Leon Spinks and Mojo. That drew well. Then there was one more show after that, which packed a place in Ohio near the Indiana border. I forget the name of the town. But then we heard that WCW was going to go national in competition with WWF. Now, we were able to compete with WWF because they were only coming to the towns like three times a year. So if you're in between, even one night in Indianapolis when Hulk Hogan was wrestling Paul Orndorff down the street with, I'm sure, a very good house, we drew 2,000 people at the Tyndall Armory to see Dick the Bruiser wrestle Mojo in a steel cage. So we were still hanging in there. But Bruiser and I sat down and said, you know, with WCW going to all these towns three times a year, and that's six times a year, and there wouldn't be any room for us. And Aldous Huxley said, inevitable consequences are beacons for wise men and scarecrows for fools. We could see the handwriting on the wall. So what we did, we all agreed to terminate the promotion. And we paid everybody off, all our bills. We were debt-free. And I took the money we had saved and divided by percentage of the ownership to Dick the Bruiser, me, Chris Carter, and Wojo. We all had pieces of promotion. And everybody trusted me with the money, but they didn't trust each other. So that made me the automatic treasurer. So everybody got their fair share of the money, And then we just disbanded. And though we were still friends, we went our separate ways professionally. But these pseudo intellectuals and these pseudo wrestling experts that imply that Bruiser Bedlam went broke really irked me because they don't know what they're talking about. It's like Kenny Rogers says, we knew when to hold him and we knew when to fold him. We made money. We split up money at the end. And Bruiser Bedlam was a successful promotion. And one time Scott Romer told me Dick the Bruiser was very happy that I did this because it extended his career another couple of years because Bruiser also saw the inevitable consequences coming. So it was a positive thing. And we couldn't have done it without the total cooperation of a tremendous crew of guys. Everybody there, everybody that's on this call and many other guys, some of them who aren't with us anymore, we'll get to that later, made this promotion possible because they all could do what they're supposed to do. That was work, wrestle, and put the promotion above their own personal egos. Everybody did that we had. So I'd just like to go on record. Now, I'm done. Go ahead.
All right. Well, as we go on, and I ask them these things, if anybody wants to chime in, feel free. You don't have to wait a turn or anything. I kind of want some of this to be organic, right? Some storytelling and discussion amongst you guys. Because like I said, a lot of you guys hadn't spoke to each other in years. So if something sparks, go with it. Don't be afraid to speak up. But let's
Jerry, when was the last show? Around what time?
The last show?
Yeah, what year?
Well, I'm really bad at numbers, but it was the same month as the Leon Spinks fight. That was our second to last match. So it was one match after that.
And then 1991, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know the date of my first match. I asked Lanny Poffo because he knew. My first match was against Lanny Poffo. I had no idea what year that was. I don't have a good mind for that. But I do know that Leon and Wojo was our second to last match. So, and the next match just a few days later. So that would be it. To answer your question, I hope. I mean, I don't know. It's a great answer.
Well, let's turn it to Chris Carter there. Jerry mentioned that there were some guys that kind of came over, right? I mean, you were wrestling for Bruiser prior to Bruiser Bedlam. Always one of the one of the more popular guys there. But then you turned on Calypso Jim and joined Dr. Jerry Graham at one point during Bruiser Bedlam. But I want to talk about, though, when Jerry was injured in the car accident, because everybody talks about this, right? And it turned Jerry face, and then you and him had one of the most heated rivalries of the time. How did this come about? Obviously, right, the accident was a shoot, right? That was not a story.
That was definitely a shoot. But first off, I want to say that, Bruiser Bedlam was such a blessing for me, and it was so great that Jerry let me in part of that. That was some of the best times I ever had in wrestling. I just want to say one other thing. I never understood why Jerry Graham wasn't the booker in the WWF, because he had one of the greatest minds in wrestling that I've ever seen. I learned so much from him over the years, and he gave me some opportunities to let my talent shine, which was absolutely unbelievable. Some of the best opportunities I ever had in my life. As far as the car accident and everything goes, man, that definitely was a shoot. And you know, Jerry's brain never turned off from wrestling. He's like, okay, man, so how are we going to do or incorporate this into the program? And man, one thing led to another, and we did that. One of the best moments we ever did was we had Jerry in a wheelchair, a cup with some pencils in it, put some change in it, and pushed him off into about two dozen different tables and chairs and cabinets and stuff. And man, it just took off from there.
Well, thank you for the compliment, Chris. I was, but you were, like I said, if I could say something about Chris Carter, he could do anything. He could mechanically execute the maneuvers very well. He learned a lot about ring psychology, but there's one thing he could do anything. Baby face, he could do anything. But the thing that he did better, I'll say the same thing about Terry Sullivan's commentary. I'll say this about Chris Carter. There may have been guys his equal, but there's nobody better when it came to milking a tag. The best. For those people that don't know that term, when a babyface and heel tag team are wrestling, you create a situation where one of the babyfaces is in dire distress. And the only way they can possibly pull this out is for this man to make a tag. And of course, you tease the people by just quite not making it. And then Calypso Jim, who was great with fire, and when you made the tag, the place went crazy. But it was Chris Carter that set it up. He knew how to know. I've tried to teach so many guys. Some of them learned pretty, but Carter was the best. I talk about Ray Stevens, anybody who was also good at that. Carter knew how to milk a tag. He could do anything. I'm not pigeonholing him. He could do anything. But that was what he did better than anybody that I ever worked with, just for whatever it's worth. And it's hard to do that.
I'll tell you what, it was a blessing that we got together and got to work together, because we had such great times in that ring, and we had such great times on the road and everything. That experience, the whole experience of the 80s for me, was just phenomenal. And you made that happen for me, and I thank you very much.
Well, it's my pleasure. I got Chris here and me. I got one quick story that I think is kind of funny. Chris and me found ourselves booked in Pittsburgh. I don't know if you remember this or not at all. And they didn't know who either of us were. Now, at that time, I was the heel and Chris Carter was the babyface. When we get in the ring, they announce from Detroit, Michigan, Chris Carter, and people were, they're not sure, but they go, yay. And then they says, you're not going to believe who this other guy is, because Jerry Graham Sr. was very big in Pittsburgh. And he said, this is the son of Dr. And everybody started cheering and screaming and yelling. So we're going out to the handshake, and I told Chris, you know you're the heel, don't you? And he says, yes, I already got that. You know, Graham was a heel, the son of, I guess it was like Fred Curry, the son of a heel is automatically a baby face. But then we just, at the handshake, we just switched the match. And it was just a one-time deal. We were in and we were out. I don't know if Chris went back to Pittsburgh. That was my only time there. And
a great knowledge of the business. It was a natural thing that kind of came to both of us. So we went with the flow of things, and we could go with the flow in the middle of a match. Whatever we had to do, we did it to get the match over. That was the bottom line. It wasn't ego.
Sell the match. Sell the match, not yourself. That's right.
Yeah. It was what's best for the fans.
Without question.
I'd like to jump on there about Carter for a minute.
Sure.
Because you can train all kinds of guys to do all kinds of things and learn the moves, and you can teach and teach and teach. But some guys just have the natural instinct for it, the natural ability, the ability to know where you are in the ring at all times, to be able to see a few moves ahead. And I don't want to embarrass you, Chris, but you were one of those guys who had it. And it's a very elite club of people who have it. You know exactly what I mean when I say it. You know, you it just came natural to you. You were made to be a wrestler, and I thought you had an outstanding run with Bruiser Bedlam and beyond.
Oh, shucks, Gary.
I mean,
you know what? We also had some great times together.
I'd love you to be able to say that I'm in a blessed public setting, and it embarrasses the hell out of Carter to hear that. But he could have a match with anybody. There's nobody that he had to be intimidated by. He could always take a lead. We put him in the ring with Road Warrior Hawk and all kinds of, and the Rock and Roll Express. And never once did I feel that that our guys, Chris Carter in particular, couldn't hold their own. And you know, that just needs to be out there.
Thank you, Gary. Yep. That's very kind of you. I'm a very blessed person, that's for sure. I'm blessed to have had all of you guys in my life.
Yeah, I've always said I think the two of the most underappreciated talents in wrestling, and both came through Bedlam, was Chris Carter and Don Kent. And I don't think those two get talked about enough in the history of professional wrestling like they should.
Don Kent.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
I learned so much from Don Kent. He actually took me under his wing, and he taught me, along with Jerry, about psychology of wrestling. But thank God I was able to understand what they were talking about, because a lot of guys don't understand the psychology. There's more to it than just getting in the ring and doing your moves and everything. But those guys together were able to get to me in a way that made me understand what needed to be done. And once again, I mean, what a blessing to have all you guys in my life.
Yeah, let's move on. Hey, let's talk to Bo for a minute. Hey, Bo, I think you're muted. I don't know what happened there. Can you hear me, Bo?
I can hear you.
Hello? Hey, Bobo, your mic's muted. Bobo.
Young Bobo. All right.
I think he's talking. Bobo, your mic's muted somehow. Uh-oh.
Unmute there.
There he is. All right. Well, let's talk to Bobo for a second. Let's while we're on the track with hot feuds with Jerry, that apparently maybe that might be the topic of the day here.
Yeah, it's a blessing to be able to work with, you know, Chris Carter and Dr. Jerry Graham and Bulldog Don Kent. And I had some of my greatest moments with those guys. Of course, you know, I wrestled for WWF at the time. And I was, every card they had there for a year in St. Louis, I was on it. You know, but I never got in the ring with somebody. I'm going to use the word at the MEST, M-E-S-C-H. So you understand what I'm talking about. Dr. Jerry Graham, Bulldog Don Kent, and Chris Carter. We was in the ring wrestling, whatever it took, we did it. We listened at Jerry, we listened at Kent, and it was the best time that I had, better than it was. I wrestled John Stone, Mr. Fuji, Rocky Johnson, Tony Atlas, Adrian Adonis. It wasn't nothing like when I got in the ring with Jerry and Don Kent, you know. I remember the funniest time that the most hilarious time that I had was when Jerry and I, we was all of us in Dusty, Ohio wrestling, and the lady pulled a gun out and tried to shoot Kent and Jerry because they was beating me up.
here's a bit of nostalgia.
I remember that.
That's is that the haircut, Chris Carter?
Yeah.
That's it.
They come to me and said, "We're going to cut your hair."
That's what I want to ask about. Tell us about the haircut.
You know, so I said, "Okay, fine." And then, you know, everybody was saying, "I wouldn't let him cut my hair." So the way Jerry come to me and explained it to me, you know, I said, "I'm going to do it. I'm going to go ahead and do it." I said, "Sure, we can do it." So we went on with the hair thing and everything, you know. And it was while I was getting my hair cut, when I slammed Don Kent, I go, "Uh-oh, here it comes." I knew Jerry was coming. And so once it got over with, I said, "My next thing to do, I got to cry. I have to cry." So I cried. And right today, people remember me, and I thank God for Jerry. You know, and Wojo and Don Kent, bless his soul. I thank God for him because people remember me. I walk in arena right today. "Hey, I remember you. You old school Calypso Jim. You got your hair cut." And I go like, "Man, that was years ago." Yeah. And they still got a serious reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a
serious reaction. And you were.
And
crying.
I mean,
they cut my hair.
I look forward to that. And, you know, Jerry is an outstanding guy. I would say it, you know, in his face, behind his back, you know. And if somebody would say something wrong, they probably would have a big fight out of me. I learned a lot from Jerry, Chris Carter, and Don Kent, even from Wojo, although he knocked the cold out of my chest one time.
We learned a good thing from Wojo, how to take a butt kick in.
Just one time?
I really learned that. But the most of all, like I said, is Jerry. I thank you. I thank Warncheck for booking me. I got a chance to tag with Road Warrior Hawk and won the belts. And, you know, it was a big thing coming up, you know. And I'm like, okay, I get some phone call. Then when I get there, you're tagging with Road Warrior Hawk. I go, what? You know, and I thank you, Warncheck, for that opportunity. It boosted my career a little bit, you know. And then Terry Sullivan announcing the way he could really PR that mic, man. He really could do it, you know. And I thank God for all y'all, you know. Stuff. My career is still going at 72 years old. I am still most of the stuff that I have been doing after heart surgery, knee replacement, stroke, too many heart attacks. I'm still here, thanks to the knowledge that I learned from them. The work, smart, not hard, in the ring. You know, and I truly thank God for y'all, you know, stuff that everybody gave me. I thank y'all for giving me the opportunity because at one time, I don't know that Jerry remember this. I remember the conversation. "I don't know why you're boosting Jim. He can't make no money." Jerry took me up on his ring and showed Bruiser that I could be able to draw like anybody else right there in Toledo, you know. And I thank y'all for that. I really do. For giving me that opportunity.
If I can chime in on that, Clipso Jim or Bobo Brazil Jr. did exactly what I did, many of us did in our early days. We'd take a bag and go to a arena we weren't booked at in the hopes that somebody wouldn't show up. And one time in Hammond, Indiana, somebody didn't show up. It was my opponent, and he was called Disco Dog then, I believe. And he's a Universal Disco Dog. And when I got done wrestling, I went right to Bruiser. I said, this guy is main event material. I mean, this guy, he's, and then I forget what happened. I'd left Bruiser for a while, but when we came back, you know, there was Calypso Jim, and he was getting a push. So maybe Bruiser had a little respect for my opinion, but this guy was terrific. I mean, usually you get some new guy. I was a new guy once too, so please don't think I'm being condescending or talking down, because I went through that as well. But when I tied up with this guy right off the bat, you can tell when you tie up with a guy almost 50% of what's going to happen the rest of the match. And it was just right. He was right there. He was right there. Nothing to do about it. So I just want to throw that in. Floor is yours, Dave.
Well, all right. I appreciate you for giving me the opportunity. My career was in your hand, and I thank you that I was able to make it over.
You're more than welcome.
Was obedient in the rain. Yes.
Well, let's talk to Terry. Let's talk to Terry Sullivan now, because everybody's talking about all these hot feuds and all these storylines. Well, that's only half of it, right? Because Terry Sullivan's the guy who does such a good job of telling the story, helping to build it over, helping to get it over, helping to work with these guys in the interviews. Terry, but I have to say on your side, man, this had to be fun. When you got these kind of feuds, this kind of material to work with, I'm not undermining your ability, but it's almost like a calling it in, right? It's easy to work with, isn't it?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, it really is. It doesn't take, you don't have to think about it. You just react to what's going on. And you know, as somebody has said, the guys in the ring provide the music, and those of us announcing at ringside provide the lyrics. And, you know, yeah, with these guys telling a great story, it's just really easy.
And, I cannot get out of my mind you doing the openings with Bruiser. And your reaction to this? Yeah, he always called you his favorite announcer, Terry, and everything. I mean,
remember my last name?
Oh, something else. So let's move on. Gary Warrenchak.
Announcer Terry.
Yeah.
Terry. Let me tell you why I asked about when the promotion actually ended. And I looked it up while we were here, and that Leon Spinks match with Wojo in Toledo was in 1989. And here's why I brought that up, because in just a few years after that, independent wrestling took a whole different turn. That's where like Smoky Mountain started in 1991. With their TV and Jim Cornette and his quality mind for wrestling. ECW then in Philadelphia within six months or a year after that in 1992. I think that the WWA Bruiser Bedlam TV program was every bit as good and would have been able to fit into that era when you had the insider newsletters that were starting to push the independent promotions. Those that were lucky enough to have TV, like Cornette had and Smokey and Paul Heyman had in ECW. I have no doubt that if what happened in 1985 through 1989 that Jerry and others put together in Toledo, that TV and the storylines and the quality of talent could have competed on any level with those other promotions that I mentioned and others around the country, and then we could have gotten into some talent sharing. It's almost a shame that it was a few years ahead of its time, because you look at the quality that, like, Jerry Graham could talk every bit as good as Jim Cornette and Paul Heyman, and the talent that we had. From the hands like Don Kent, who was actually an international performer and actually had his roots in the 60s, and El Brazero and Chris Carter. And then we had, you know, we had a few, you know, we had an array of characters. But my point is that this promotion, had it started a couple of years later, had it run a couple of years later, might have had a very different spot in wrestling history as far as independent wrestling goes. I realized WWA was a major promotion at one time, but it was pretty much a regional promotion when Jerry was running it. And I can only imagine what it would have been like if, because when I ran, and I ran with Chris in Midwest Territorial Wrestling a couple of years after that, I was able to do some cooperative talent exchanges, sharing expenses with Smoky Mountain, with ECW. I think ECW still owes me half of Marty Jannetty's trans for one of the matches, but it was water under the bridge. I hold no grudges. Point is, even without having a TV, in the little thing that I did for a couple of years in the 90s, we were able to, you know, get some exposure in the insider newsletters and even in the magazines and stuff. So it's just high praise, I think, for what Jerry and others put together in Toledo, that we could have held our own with anybody. And I really appreciate the opportunity to learn so much. I got to sit next to Terry Sullivan and I got to babble in some commentary, and he was very kind and very, very nice to me, even though I was horrible on the mic. You know, I got to get in the ring and do some ring announcing. Jerry let me be the vice president of promotion, so if we ever needed somebody to get in the ring and suspend somebody, I'd be the guy. I learned a lot, and it really helped me as I went on, and I worked with WCW and did my own thing a little bit after that. So all good memories of WWA Bruiser Bedlam Wrestling.
Hey, can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to make sure you can still hear me. My phone started making some funny signs and stuff I didn't understand, so I just wanted to make sure you can still hear me. Thank you.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Nothing more to say. Just want to make sure I'm still part of the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, can we get back to Bruiser Bedlam for a second? And Gary, thank you for all those compliments. That was really great. You know, but I do want to get back to Terry Sullivan, because Terry Sullivan is the one that brought Bruiser Bedlam to life. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Terry's the dean of professional wrestling commentators. There's none better. And if I'm not mistaken, he is the longest running commentator for professional wrestling. I believe he beats JR by 1 year. So as far as I'm concerned, he's the longest. And he told
us still alive that old.
he told the stories of what we were doing and brought them to life in a way that is just absolutely unbelievable. And to this day, I still work with Terry Sullivan, because we're involved with Championship International Wrestling, and Terry is the lead commentator there, and he's kind of taken me under his wing and helped me doing some commentary and stuff. But Terry, what a hell of a job you have done for so many years. You have the greatest voice for doing that, and your knowledge of professional wrestling is just absolutely unbelievable, the way you bring it to life for the fans. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. That's very nice.
And makes it so credible, right? Because we talked about the haircuts and the car wrecks and the blood and everything. And here's Terry, a little more straight laced, a little more credible, right? That more almost that news anchor type approach, right? Not an over the top character, but bringing a sensibility to this madness.
He's like the Walter Cronkite of professional wrestling.
Can I ask a question for the group?
Sure.
This is just a question. It's your opinion. So whatever you say is the correct answer. When I'm asking somebody's opinion, how much better do you think we would have drawn had it just stayed like the territories? In other words, there was no WWF, that if they wanted wrestling, we were it. How would we think we would have done?
That's my question. If we were 5 years sooner in that business, we would have made such a dent in the territories. It would have been absolutely unbelievable. We missed it, but we still had a great, great run. And there's one other guy from the Bruiser Bedlam we haven't talked about much. And that was my tag team partner, Muhammad Jihad Saad. And he had a lot to could do with Bruiser Bedlam.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well,
yes.
I hope he's in paradise enjoying this.
Can I tell you something about Saad? This is a good thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was a heel, and his job was to get heat. And he had plenty of heat in Indianapolis because we were sending guys down there too as well. And one time later on when I was running Toledo for the WCW, they said, can you send a few guys down to Indianapolis? And I says, sure. So Saad was one of the guys I sent down there. I later found out that they had put Saad against Ric Flair in like a job match. And no matter how bad Flair beat Saad, they were cheering for Flair. They hated Saad so bad. And Saad wasn't there for that. And then Buzz Sawyer jumped in the ring and the two of them started beating up Saad and they started cheering even more because he had so much heat from being a main event wrestler in Indianapolis that there's nothing they could have done to him to switch the heat back. He had more heat than Flair. He had more heat than Buzz Sawyer. And I'll also say it while I'm talking, it reminds me of the time that Carter wrestled Buzz Sawyer for WWF in Detroit. And I told them, I says, if you're trying to get Buzz Sawyer over as a heel, it's not going to work. And said, oh, no, we got the TV. And if you remember, Chris, they were cheering Sawyer as he soundly thrashed you, which is a tribute to you and your heat. They had it absolutely was there. They were cheering and cheering and cheering. Nothing Sawyer could do to turn them the fans with Carter. And that's because Carter done such a good job over the years building up his heat. And so I say that just to say that when we were in there with the big boys, we held our own. That's all.
Jerry, I loved it. I remember that night well because I remember you looking at Gorilla Monsoon and saying exactly what you said. If you think that Sawyer's going to get over as a heel against Chris Carter, you're out of your mind. And Gorilla Monsoon looked at you like you were nuts. After that match, he said to you, you were right.
Well, there's a gentleman. That's a sign of a gentleman.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk. We've talked about how part of the mix was Bedlam had all you guys, right, the veterans. But then you also brought in some younger guys, some newer guys, developed a few guys of your own. And one of those guys is sitting right there in Rex Bodie, right, who had very little exposure until he came up. Rex, when you came into this locker room, we're right with a lot of established guys, a lot of guys that had worked together for many, many years. What was that like? Did you have trouble fitting in? Or what was it like coming into it as a newer guy?
It was thrilling. There was a time in my life. Thanks, Doc.
You're more than welcome. You both have paid me back with good matches and good talent. So you're dead as even. Yeah, you made it back to in the ring.
Okay. Hey, Jerry, one real quick thing in. Rex Bodie was integral, Jerry, and your brainchild of a barbed wire match, if you remember that. I think that was one of the first barbed wire matches that ever happened. It was me and Jerry against Bodie and Scott Recksteiner. And I'm telling you, man, we tore the house down, blew the roof off that place. And that, thank you for that, Rex.
Ah, Chris. You guys are the best. You know, there was a brilliant man once said, it's better to have been a has-been than it never was. So, hey, my hat's off to you, Gary, Jim.
All has been.
You guys are the best.
Well, I talked to Rex. Gary, I talked to Rex a little yesterday. Jerry, what's the thinking of taking a amateur standout kid from Michigan and making him a cowboy, though?
Yeah. Well, I just wanted characters. Now, I trained Scott Steiner, as you know, Wojo and I did.
Yep.
And Rex Bodie came and worked out with us. So, I mean, he had been trained by George Steele. I mean, he was already been trained, but, a little extra workout never hurt anybody.
Sure. Right, yeah.
And I could see that Rex Bodie had it, but I'm saying, let's face it. It's just like myself, Jerry Joffe. What kind of a name is that? You're going to, like Bull Curry once told me, he says, this is no kidding. Bull Curry says, Jaffe, huh? What kind of name is Jaffe? The only place we're going to put you over is a top rope. That's the only place. So you got to get another name. So there was nothing wrong with Jim Oliver's work. There's nothing wrong with his execution and everything. But I wanted to create a character that, like I did for myself. So I figured, everybody likes, we used to have Cowboy Bob Ellis, Cowboy Frankie Lane. We didn't have a cowboy, so we made a Cowboy Rex Bodie, and he did a really good job with the bulldog headlock and everything. And he was always there. Like I said, this thing was what they say in the theater was an ensemble cast. None of us was an absolute standout star. What it was an ensemble of guys working together, always wanting the promotion to be better. And some guys would say I was a little hard on them after a match because I didn't like this, didn't like that. But the person I was hardest on most of all was me. When I'd watch my matches, I'd go to the mirror or whatever, that's metaphorically. But I could have done this better. I could have done that better. But that is a healthy attitude to have. When somebody comes to you and they want to help you because they saw you did something and they didn't think it was quite right. And it depends what their attitude is. They're going to say, you're just shit, you stink, you shouldn't be in the business. That's one thing. But if a guy says, I saw you do that, it'd be a little bit better if you did it this way. That's another. I'm not going to mention any names because this is an upscale interview, but there was a guy once that was similar to Abdullah the Butcher. And he was working for us in a later promotion, way past Bruiser Bedlam. And he was a little bit slow. It hit the guy and just stand there and look at him. It hit him and stand there and look at him. So I took him aside and said, you know, you're doing okay, but I'd like to see you get a little bit more aggressive. You know, just, you don't have to start bouncing off the ropes. Just follow him around more, hit him more, kick him more, just stay on him more. And he used some profanity to me and quit. Nobody tells me how to work. I mean, I didn't tell him in a bad way. I was trying to figure out, I had more experience than he. I know what I was watching, and he would have done better if he would have been a little bit more aggressive. And he quit. So you can't tell, I just say it the old time, but you can't tell these young kids anything. I never told anybody they stunk. Anything I've ever said to anybody was, same thing that they said to me was when the old timers would tell me something, I would appreciate it. I'd say, thank you. And, today these guys, they think they can throw a drop kick, know how to put up a ring and they're a promoter. And I watch these guys come and go and, there's nothing you can do for them because they know everything. It took me years to learn what I learned. And I had some really good teachers. Today it's a different story.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I think, one of the reasons that Bedlam was so appealing, right? Because it wasn't driven like that, right? It was the stories, right? It was the emotions. And all the way from, you know, from Jerry with the ideals to all of you guys executing to Terry selling it and Gary selling it on commentary. I mean, it was all about, you know, telling the story, making the crowd, you know, feel the emotions. And I think that's why it stood out.
Well, like Martino Angelo taught me once, the Sheik never did this, but he says, what's the matter with putting the baby face over, having a baby face champion, and then every time the heel tries to get his belt back, have the baby face use a heel finish? They were, let's start screwing the heels. So I did that with Wojo and Steiner, and it worked like a charm. Steiner wins the belt, and every time Wojo tried to get it back, Steiner would screw him somehow, and it was drawing money. It was Angelo taught me that, and I never understood why they didn't do that, because the Sheik didn't want to lose any matches, but it worked like a charm. You see, the heel wasn't hurt because he got screwed, and the babyface was the winners. The people were happy. They want to see a babyface win sometimes. You know? So we did plenty of that, and it's just something that we did. But I learned that from somebody else. I didn't just wake up one morning and say, "Hey, here's a great idea." So for whatever that's worth. The conversation.
Well, and if you're talking babyface and heel, let's spin back, Jerry, you and Bobo, if we got Bobo back on here. I think he's muted again, but Bobo was the kind of preeminent face, right? Always the good guy. Was there ever any thought of, hey, let's try Calypso Jim with a little heel run and see what happens?
Not Bruiser Bedlam.
No.
Nope. It's not fixed, don't broke it. But when things were starting to slide in the WWA, I made a suggestion to Bobo Brazil Sr. And I says, we got to shock these people. Why don't you turn heel and have me manage you? And the people will be absolutely shocked. He says, no, I can't do that, Jerry. I can't do that. And just think about that. We turned a Moose Sholak heel and it popped, but then he didn't like it. So the very first match, he turned back babyface, their first match out. The storyline was that Moose went to jail from a bar fight and Bruiser wouldn't bail him out, but Dr. Graham bailed him out. So now he owes Dr. Graham. It was me and Moose Sholak against Spike Huber and Wilbur Snyder. And Sholak turned on me. So it was a wasted angle. The first match, I mean, eventually Moose probably would have turned back babyface, but let's see if we can milk this. Well, I thought Bobo Brazil, that would be devastating to the fans. I think that would really have created something. But the saddest words of tongue or pen are the words it might have been, said Alfred Lord Tennyson.
Well, hey, Bo, what about you? Did you ever have any desire to dip your toe into that heel?
As a heel? Yeah, I turned heel in Toledo there. On our second run, they turned me heel for a little while. And Jerry came up with the idea that I take the money. So I took the money and become a heel. And I had so much heat. They said, they better turn you back, baby. So they turned me back, baby. I took about in 2 months, I won the world's heavyweight championship and then held it for 2 months and turned back over. I think we were running with Phil organization and Andy and them organization. Doc was there. It was Doc's idea to turn me heel. And I turned heel. They gave me a big roll of money. I mean, a big roll. So, one guy told me, said, hey, that was worth turning heel with all that money. What you going to do with it? I said, I'm going to probably buy me a new outfit. And I came in the next month with a new outfit. I've been heel several times. And it just being a heel, I enjoyed it, but they still cheer me, anyhow. So I turned back baby.
Another one I wanted to turn heel that wouldn't do it was George Cannon. When he was doing his Superstars of Wrestling, I said, why don't you turn heel and manage me and Wojo? Say you're tired of these stupid Canadians and the Americans not appreciating two of the premier talents in the world. With me as their manager, we're going to go, the sky's the limit. But Jerry, I don't think that'll work right now. And George had that high Irish brogue, he was one of my best friends in the business, although, he could be a little ornery too. But that's when I realized I had the curse on me. George Cannon's last match before he died was with me. Dick DeBruiser's last match on TV before he died was with me. Don Kent's last match on TV before he died was a tag team with me. So I feel like the Grim Reaper.
Jerry, remember when you used to call my house and my son was little and he'd answer the phone and he'd say, who is this? And you go, it's George Cannon.
George Cannon used to do, Dick DeBruiser would say, call me collect, because it's a business call, I'll pay for it, because those days didn't have cards and stuff. So he'd say, collect call for Dick DeBruiser. So Dick DeBruiser would say, hello? And then Cannon would go into Bruiser's voice, hello? And the operator would go crazy. Operator, what did he just say? And he'd go, no, I said I'll accept the charges. Well, what do you mean accept the charges? He'd drive the operator nuts, because George could do a pretty good Dick DeBruiser. And George is one of the guys that the wrestling was better off for having him been in it, because he was a good hand. He was a good manager. He was a good worker, too. And he was funny. He made me laugh. The first time I met him, he told me a joke that I still tell to this day. And he just absolutely was. And he, once again, he was, like I said, a good manager, a good talker. And I thought if he started crying again and stuff and managed me and Wojo, we would have really had something going. But once again, he didn't see it. So at that time, I was just an employee. Later on, I was his partner, but at that time, I was just an employee, and so I made a suggestion, did what I was told.
George Cannon, Jerry, actually gave us the opportunity to get together.
Yes.
In the very early 80s, he put us together, put you as my manager, and man, the rest was history after that.
Yeah, I could never figure out a booking decision that he made. We were getting a lot of heat on TV with John Bonello. And at the end of the last week of the Newfoundland tour that you were on and I was not, he flies in Cool Cat Jackson for a special match. I was wondering, what if he flew me in to be your partner to go against Hartford Love, who was a solid Newfie babyface, and John Bonello? I think that would have torn the house down. But he went with Cool Cat Jackson. And nothing wrong with Cool Cat Jackson. He was a good hand. I'm just saying, with the going along with the storyline that we were having, I'm not knocking anybody. I don't get taken wrong here. But it was right there. Everybody wanted to see me get my ass kicked because I was helping Carter as his manager every step of the way. And yeah.
That was all on TV. That was all part of the program. And I even mentioned that to George. And he goes, no, this is going to really draw.
Well, I also had another one. Tell me what you think of this. And once again, this is an opinion. This is an opinion. So whatever you say is the correct answer. Nobody's wrong. Early on, I was up in Montreal doing tapings for George. And Staler White's up there. And he was kind of a rough person. I don't speak ill of the dead, but he was. I just want to say my suggestion to George was, why don't you bring Big Dr. Jerry in and have the two of us start beating you up at an interview and have Sailor White come out and save you and say, I'm not going to have those two Canadians beat up by an American, a Canadian beat up by two Americans. I had to come and help Cannon. And if we went to Newfoundland with that, where it was his hometown for Sailor White, I thought that would have drawn a ton of money. If Jerry could have stayed sober, it would have been a problem. But the angle itself, I thought was good. But just throw that out. If you tell me I'm wrong, I won't be mad at anybody. It's just an opinion. But I did take the Jerry being a drunk into the equation. But I thought I could control him for 3 weeks. You know, maybe not.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. No answer. Okay, I'll count that as a zero. No opinion.
That was great thinking, man. You have a great mind for wrestling, and I still can't believe to this day that you got spurned by the WWF at that time because they were out of their minds.
Well, when Pat Patterson took me up to the hotel room, I thought I was in the court of Caliglia. And once again, I want to make this very, very clear. I have many, many gay friends in and out of the wrestling business. That's got nothing to do with it. But sexual harassment is sexual harassment, whether it's gay or straight. And that's what annoyed me about the whole WWE. Not just my experience. Mine was kind of modern, mild, you know. But I've heard some stories about a lot of these guys, and I just think you should be hired or fired on your talent. If they didn't think I was any good, that would be fine. But the way they fired me was a classic. I left the St. Louis Chase Hotel, and the next day went back to Toledo to our family business, Tyler Meats. And I was out calling on customers. When I came back to the office, I had a message from my secretary. A girl from the WWF called and said not to come back to any of the shows. So Vince's secretary used my secretary to fire me. They couldn't even say, look, it's not what we're looking. You could fire a guy. I mean, George Steele was one of his lieutenants, as was Jay Strongbow. These are all good friends of mine. They could have called me up and said, Jerry, you're just not what we're looking for, maybe down the road. There's ways to fire guys without being totally abusive. But that, to me, not that I was fired. He didn't want me. But the insult of having his secretary call my secretary was, to me, beyond the pale. But who am I? who am I to complain? What are you going to do?
You know, you can't talk about WWA and Bruiser Bedlam without like going into some detail about the great Wojo. And I'm sorry Wojo couldn't join us today, but you know, Wojo was kind of at the center of everything throughout the majority of the run. He held the belt for almost the entire time that I was involved, except when Scott Recksteiner, Scott Steiner held it for a bit. But and then near the end, Wojo in with Leon Spinks, Wojo in with Tommy Wildfire Rich, the Iron Sheik, always the man on top, always the guy that because he was legitimate, he was an Olympian, he was a shooter, and he was a very adequate professional, but he had credentials that made him a star.
You had to believe him. Nobody could say this guy's not a real wrestler. This guy's not tough. I don't like pro wrestling. That's fine. But you know, he was the real deal. And he took to it. A lot of amateurs have trouble making a transition. Rex Bode was a great amateur wrestler. He made the transition quite well, as did Steiner, as did Bob Roop, as did Von Roschke. But many a guy just couldn't make the transition. They didn't realize Like, for example, where Libby High School, where Wojo taught, to do a fundraiser, and that match ended with Wojo beating me to a bloody pulp outside the ring and getting disqualified. And they're carrying me out on a stretcher, totally unconscious. And he says, "The winner by disqualification, Dr. Jerry Graham." And then I came on TV. Well, I was the first man to beat Wojo as a pro. You saw the better man won, you know, and I was like, you know, carried on a stretcher. Well, that's because he got mad because I beat him. See, he attacked me from behind. Just a funny from the past. I remember that one. But Wojo would do, like I said, he put Steiner over. Wojo would do what he too, and sometimes the amateurs, not all, would be a little bit more touchy about stuff like that. But Wojo was there to get the promotion over. And
yeah, I can tell you this, that I can vote 100% that Wojo was the toughest, roughest, meanest son of a gun that I ever got in a ring with. You talk about legit. He was legit. I don't think he really meant to kill me as much as he did, but he was so tough that he right. couldn't not use that. It was absolutely unbelievable, because when I had a match with Wojo, I needed 4 days to recuperate from that.
Hey, Jerry.
Well, Wojo must have been afraid of me, because I never had that experience, but he knew what would happen to him if he ever tried to get stiff with me.
We're all afraid of you, Doc. We're still afraid.
Jerry. Nobody's afraid of me. Last week I got beat up by a Quaker.
How's Wojo doing, Jerry?
Wojo is doing pretty good. I talked to him on the phone all the time. He's still helping his son coach wrestling, and he's working out still. And I remember that when he was 48, he had that aneurysm of the aorta. That's what killed John Ritter. And now Wojo's in his 70s. I guess the surgeon did a really good job of fixing him up. And he still works out. And he's kind of to himself. As a matter of fact, as Dave will vouch, when Dave asked me to, Wojo never does interviews. He just doesn't. He's a very quiet type person. Well, I called him up and told him about Dave. This is a while back. And he agreed to do it. I think Dave is the only interview he's ever agreed to do with anybody. And he agreed to do this one, but obviously, like me, he was a computer illiterate, and I'm the same way. But my son David wouldn't have been here. Fortunately, when Carter dropped him on his head, it wasn't hard enough to do any damage, because he was able. he was able to. He was able to get the. He was able to get the up and running.
Yeah, Wojo was going to be here, and I've talked to him several times over the last few days. And problem is, he didn't have the technology to do it. He didn't even know how to have a cell phone. In his computer, he says it takes 30 minutes to warm up. And he just didn't have the means to do it, but he was going to, but we couldn't make it happen.
Well, we tried, but he also, let's not forget, one of Wojo's key mark things was the challenge.
Yeah.
As world champion, he felt obligated to take on anybody that thought they were fit to wrestle him. So we would go around the country, or Midwest, I'd say. But he would have to bring a doctor's slip and sign a waiver. Although in Ohio, we didn't need that because there was an assumption of risk law, but we didn't want to take any chances. And he would beat everybody. And we had $100,000 if Flair or Hogan or Bockwinkel or Gagne, whoever, would take on Wojo belt for belt. Our big thing is we wanted to unify the belt, which we knew they weren't going to do that, because Wojo would have killed any of them quite easily. But he was absolutely he was a champion. He was absolutely a champion.
You also had a briefcase with $10,000 in it every single night at every show we went to for anyone that wanted to come out of the audience and wrestle Wojo.
There was a guy that came to Cleveland once on a Fred Curry show and said, geez, he was the national junior college heavyweight champion. Wojo knew him, and he says, I'm here to challenge you. And Curry says, no, I'm not going to put it out. And I says, what do you mean? We advertised it. And Curry had to put up the money. It was his promotion. So Wojo's shaved bald head turned red, and he told this guy, I can't remember his name, he says, you know something? I'm trying to make a living. Now, you're a fellow amateur wrestler, and you come down here and think you're going to get to $10,000. Once he said, Fred, you're out of this. My word is good. I'm putting up the $10,000, but I'm going to tell you, when I get you in that ring, I can't use a language out because we have women and children watching. He told him what he was going to do to him. And the guy said, oh, a ring? I don't know anything about a ring. I thought this was going to be on a mat. I can't wrestle him. Good thinking, good backpedaling. Because Wojo said he's going to hurt him. And Wojo always just tried to win the matches with as little as damage as possible because it was showing most of these guys weren't. They wanted to impress their girlfriend by getting up in the ring. And if they, but this guy wouldn't get in the ring with Wojo. As soon as Wojo said, I'm putting up the money, he said, Fred, you're out of this. No, it's you and it's me and it's my money. And if you think you're going to get it easy, it's not going to happen. And it didn't happen. I always wondered. I told this to Chief J. Strongbow because I only talked to Vince McMahon a couple times, and he was. I will say this: he was polite to me, but he was not buddy-buddy. He was like a businessman. But I says, if you put Wojo on crew, and you making trips around the country, you send him to work out in the college, whatever city you're going to be in, send him in early, have him work out with the college wrestling team, and they can see that he's the real deal. And then you put him over, but when you got somebody big like Hogan, he'll do the job for you. I say put Wojo like right at the semi-main type of a thing where he's important to the show, but, he'll put guys over for you, and you really get a lot of street cred if he goes to the University of Syracuse or the University of Toledo, even, or University of Indianapolis, any place, any college, you want to go Big Ten, Ohio State, University of Michigan, and work out with the team. He would beat anybody on the team, no question. And Vince didn't like that idea. So of course, Vince did very well without me. So
like Gary mentioned earlier, and like we talked about with Terry in the announcing earlier, I mean, Wojo was in this wild, wild world, and people that have doubts, I mean, Wojo was instant credibility. With his background. I mean, no one was going to, you can say what you want, like the old Johnny Valentine. You know what? You may not believe those guys, but you're going to believe I'm real. And
Wojo was, like I said, when he walked out in the ring and I could feel it when I would manage him, people were realizing this guy is really a tough guy. His heart was in the business, and he was also a tremendous asset, as was everybody else. Everybody that's here and people that weren't here. Can I take a minute to just give some acknowledgments here to the people that have passed on and were part of this? Just mention your name real quick.
Yeah.
We've got to start with Dick the Bruiser, Bobo Brazil Sr., Moose Sholak, Terry Tyler, Malcolm Monroe, Muhammad Jihad Saad, Denny Cass, the Polynesian Wild Man, Prince Mama Muhammad, Gilbert Guerrero, and of course, Sam Botek Jr., who was there with our sponsorship of Miller Lite was our sponsor, and there would have been no Bruiser Bedlam without Miller Lite. And we needed a shout out to Dennis Cattell, who I haven't seen in probably 15 years, but he taught me how to produce and direct the TV shows. So without him helping me, that was a thing. And John Robinson Block, who owned a Toledo Blade and Cable System, who used his influence to get us on TV and gave us good coverage in the press. Those three guys made a big difference in our success because they gave us knowledge and exposure that we normally wouldn't have had. So.
Absolutely.
Case closed.
Yep.
And if I forgot anybody, it wasn't because I'm slighting them. It's because I'm a senile old man who's going to be 77 on June 7th. And, I had this idea that I read that Killer Kowalski had the Guinness Book of Records as the oldest man to compete in a professional wrestling match at 79 years and 6 or 7 months. So I was figuring on my 80th birthday, I was going to challenge Chris Carter to come and wrestle me. And now some guy in Japan just wrestled at age 83. So that another dream shattered.
Oh, man, don't tell me that. You're breaking my heart now.
Well, I've been at 83, that I've had to put a wheelchair lift on the side of the ring. They would have had to secure my leg braces. They would have had to put my neck brace on. They'd have to put the strings to hold me up. But if I answered the bell and got pinned in 10 seconds, I would have been the oldest man ever to wrestle. I didn't have to win, just have to participate. Just get in the ring. And that was it. So I figured if it happens now, I'm going to wrestle my grandson. He's a lot littler than me. Him I could beat. Okay.
Well, as we start to wind this down a little bit here, let's kind of go around everybody. Everybody tell, I mean, we've told lots of stories, obviously, but let's everybody chime in with another story. Just wild card here. It doesn't have to be prompted by anything. Just whatever pops to mind about Bruiser Bedlam and your time in there. So whoever wants to jump in and start.
Well, I'll tell you something. I got a good story, I think.
All right.
Any of you guys that have been in the ring know what I'm talking about. When something so hot happens that the crowd actually goes up an octave. You can have them screaming and yelling and yelling and screaming, but something really special happens in the ring and they go up an octave. Don't you guys know what I'm talking about, wrestlers out there?
Absolutely.
Have you heard? Okay. Now, we did a thing early on in our promotion. It wasn't quite ready for Bruiser Bedlam yet, but it involves us. Chris Carter was going to bring in a mystery partner that has never wrestled in the WWA, but we were just the WWA. Then this was the last days, and he came to Toledo. All we could guarantee was he was a big star in many other promotions and had wrestled in Madison Square Garden. He had wrestled in Japan. Everybody knows this guy, but he had never wrestled for the WWA before. And he was going to unmask when Carter tagged him. And this guy comes in with a mask and a sheet over him so you couldn't see his body. A lot of times you see the way the guy walks. You might recognize a characteristic. This guy came into the dressing room from his car completely covered up. And Chris knows what I'm talking about. And to build up for this match, Carter was going on the interview saying that, you know, this is the one man. When I was partners with Dr. Graham, we'd be in a hotel room and he'd wake up screaming this guy's name in the middle of the night. I'd have to hold him with a little child. He'd shake and shiver. And he said, this is one guy. So I don't have any idea who you're talking about, Carter. This is ridiculous, but it's not right to not let me know. We got to know who we're going to wrestle so we can train properly. Carter said, well, you'll find out who he is when I tag him. And so at one time on TV, I actually broke down in tears and Don Kent's patting me on the back. Wojo came out, just hugging you, upset the doctor this way. You should tell him who this partner is. So we really went through the skies on who this mystery partner was. And the people were on edge. And it was going to be a lumberjack match. So in case I became too terrified when I saw the mystery partner, I couldn't leave the ring. And before the match, I told all the lumberjacks, this is back in the dressing room. I says, if I try to get out of the ring and make it, anybody lets me out is fired. I don't care if you got to be, I don't care if you got to shoot. If I try to get out of the ring and I make it through, you're fired. So if you hurt me holding me back, you're not fired. But if I get out of there, so these guys were juiced up. So anyway, the guy comes out and still nobody knows who this guy is. And this is where Carter comes in with his ability we talked about earlier to milk a tag. He was at his best. A couple of times he made the tag and the ref didn't see it. And the guy would come in and the people were just going crazy. They wanted to know, and they did not. This is one thing we really pulled off perfectly. Did not have the idea who it is. And Carter, he was the one that guy. But finally, when he tags him, the guy comes in the ring, rips everything off. It's Flying Fred Curry. And then Chris went nuts. It went up an octave. But when Carter made that tag and the referee signaled, yes, even before he took the mask off, the tag was what brought that up an octave to where the ceiling's going to come off the place. Then they came out and won the belts from us. When I ran out of the ring, I ran as fast as I could. They grabbed me. It was a shoot, which is what I wanted. And they threw me back in the ring a couple of times. And then we took our beating, me and Kent, and they walked away with the belts. But it was just an evening that I remembered because of the crowd going up an octave. It's only happened a few times in my long career, but it just it's in the air. That's my story.
Man, I'll tell you, that's a great story, and I remember that. That was so awesome that night, Jerry. My story is that when we were wrestling, I think it was for the Metro Detroit Ford dealers out at the Pontiac Silverdome on an outdoor show. There was probably 10,000 people or more at that show. It was me, Boba Brazil, Dick the Bruiser, against, I know it was Jerry and Don Kent. Man, I can't remember the other guy. But anyway, during that match, when they put the ring together, there was a board that was separated. So I got my foot caught in the board and I got up and I tore the cartilage in my knee. I couldn't move. I mean, it's like, I'm trying to get up and Bruiser's laying there. Come on, Carter, get up and get over here and make this tag. I said, I'm really hurt. We don't pay extra for that. And so for the next 10 years, anytime anything happened to somebody, Jerry would look at them and go, we don't pay extra for that.
I have a caveat to that story. When we went to the Pontiac Silverdome for that match, they needed a opening bout, and it was Carter and myself. So if you're ever on a trivia show, and they say, who was the first two guys ever to wrestle a match at the Pontiac Silverdome? It was Jerry Graham Jr. versus Chris Carter, because we were the opening match. I don't know if you remember that, Chris, but we were the opening match before the main event.
Wasn't that amazing? Wow. And I'll tell you what, that crowd, of course, was red hot, and we blew the sky off the ceiling.
Yeah, it was a high ceiling too.
Incredibly high. It was blue.
we had a big show in Dearborn, Michigan, outside of Detroit, my hometown, and we were doing this deal with a couple of DJs, very popular DJs on the rock channel, I think WRIF at the time, Jim Johnson and a guy named George Bear. And George was well known for years for doing the Dick the Bruiser character voice on their morning show. And of course, he would be kind of a buffoonish Dick, and he'd go into the Dick voice every day, and a Bruiser come on, and sing some Bruiser songs. Anyway, so Jerry managed to work this thing where the DJs would come in, and Dick the Bruiser himself was on the table doing commentary with Terry Sullivan, and things got out of hand, and in the match, I think it was between Carter and Calypso against Jerry and Kent, Don Kent. And things got out of hand, and the DJs got involved. The DJs tried to climb into the ring, and
no, I threw them in the ring. I grabbed George
Bear. Oh, you threw them in the ring. Yeah. And then the crowd really was popping for that. And a couple of memorable things though alongside that show. One, it was my first and probably my last bump that I ever took in a ring. I came in as vice president to restore some order. And as I stuck my head through the ropes, Jerry laid me out with a forearm to the back, and it's on tape, and it's an embarrassment because I lay there for about an hour and a half, afraid to move because there were like 30 guys in the ring all trying not to step on me. And it's out there on YouTube somewhere, and you can see me at. And I sold Jerry's forearm like nobody has ever sold Jerry's forearm.
Man, it was when I saw you do that, it was like Christmas Story because you laid there like a slug.
I did. A little sidebar story on that. My wife and young daughter. My daughter was quite young at the time. She was 8 years old or 9 years old or something. They were working at the merchandise table, and then they took this brawl outside the ring, and Jerry and I think Jerry and Carter, I think Chris, it was you and Jerry, right? That were brawling outside the ring, and yeah. you went over to the merchandise table where my daughter was, and like slammed them into the table there, knocked the table over, and all the programs and stuff went flying. The thing is, my daughter wasn't smart enough at the time, and she thought that this was like, we're coming after her, and dad was laying in the ring, and I think she still remembers that 40 years later.
Traumatized by it.
Yeah, this could be. That was all. That's a great memory for me. And I watch the tape every now and then. And Terry Sullivan calls my name, and Gary Warnchak trying to restore some order, and bam. So that's one of my highlights of the time with WWA.
I used to call that the second most famous concession stand brawl, and probably the one that was even better than Memphis, or it wasn't Memphis, but it was in that territory.
Uh-huh.
Tupelo.
Yep.
All right. We got three of you left. Rex, you got a story for us?
Well, I was just off on a journey. Huh? Hey, guys, it was great. Great seeing you again. My story. Wow. Just, hey, going on the road with you guys and, you know, just being in the ring with you. was an honor. Terry, I know you from way back when. You don't remember, but
I recall. I can tell you a Rex Bode story if you want me to tell your story for you. I got a good one.
You tell a story.
One time in Indiana, Wojo couldn't show up. We had advertised a challenge match. So the best amateur we had was Cowboy Rex Bode. And Rex says, you know, Jerry, I'm not in the best of shape right now. I says, don't worry, I'll handle this. So I go to the guy that's going to wrestle him. I says, listen, he doesn't want to hurt you. This is just showbiz. Just go in with the guy, roll around. Don't do anything to get him mad because, you know, he's got a little bit of a temper. But as long as things don't know, I terrified the guy into thinking that if he got too tough, Jim was going to kill him. And it worked, apparently, because Jim did a very good job for it. But you're not in shape. I don't know if I could have gone 5 minutes in a shoot. I mean, it was it's a different kind of conditioning. And Jim did excellent for us. He took on the challenge. And as we had advertised, I forget why Wojo couldn't make it, but Jim filled right in and he did the job. And we're proud of him. And Jim, you are really an integral part of our promotion. And it's a real pleasure to see you here again today. And I hope everything's going well for you.
Thank you. Thanks, Doc. Prince, everybody talked about how you could milk a tag. And I remember a time with the Sailor, we were in Montreal, and George Cannon, I think, was running the show at that time. Baron Von Roski was there, Sailor White Brothers, I believe you, and milking a tag. I believe you might have been my tag team partner at the time, and you let the Sailor White Brothers beat me black and blue, mister.
I couldn't stop
him. I was so black and blue when I got home. Uh-huh. Frenchie Martin drove home with Frenchie Martin, and I believe, I don't know if Ox Baker was there, I think. And you were supposed to be my tag team partner, and they beat the hell out of me, man.
Better than you than me. Let me tell you something about Sailor White. I never got along with him, but there's no question he was tough. A lot of people don't remember that he beat the hell out of Billy Robinson and put him in the hospital. Everybody talked about, and Billy Robinson was a big shooter, I mean, from England.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was, but when it came time to go out in the street, and I hear it was no contest. Now, once again, I didn't physically see this, but George Cannon told me that that happened in Montreal. Sailor White beat him so bad he had to go to the hospital. And then when, you know, so that's just, so I'm not going to come in and save you. I'm sorry. You're on your own.
Thank you very much.
That's all right. Yeah. That's what we do. We run when there's danger. But if you'd have somehow taken advantage of him and hurt him, I would immediately said, tag me.
because Rex Bode was from Cut and Shoot, Texas. We couldn't make the best use out of the fact that he had great amateur credentials too. Being a state heavyweight wrestling champion in high school, in Michigan, the year that I graduated, I think, from high school. So I knew of him before we associated in the professional ranks. I have no doubt that he could have filled in for Wojo on that one $10,000.
No question.
Yep.
Jerry, the one regret I have one really big regret. That was the last time I believe we were at the Sofitel. I spent the night in jail. And I was so hungover. I had to sleep. They locked me up by myself, of course. And I slept.
What was the charge? What was the charge?
Destruction of drunken disorderly wasn't so bad. It was destruction of police property. And I don't think they pressed any charges against me because you know who it was. And it was like the last show at the Sofitel, and I missed my cue. You know, I really missed my cue. I had just enough juice. I had just enough juice to make it in the ring and work with somebody. And Wojo was there talking about how nobody was tough enough to take him on. This is the last time I'm going to work with these guys. Nobody's tough enough to take me on. I missed my cue, man. I missed my cue, and I feel
it happens. It happens.
I should have jumped. I should have jumped him then.
Well,
put him in a sleeper. Okay. Like I should have put him in a sleeper.
Should have would have called that. That's all right, but you're still great. I still enjoyed tearing up your cowboy hat. Okay.
Thank you, my friend.
That sounds a little more like Badlands Bodie than Cowboy Bodie.
That's true.
He's all he's all part of the same knucklehead, Dr. Heine. You may call me Dr. Heine.
We've been doing this for an hour plus, close to an hour and a half. I'd like to hear Terry Sullivan's commentary and how this meeting went. Terry, take it away.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's been quite an amazing day here in Indianapolis, Detroit, and wherever Calypso is. There's Bobo Jr. and Mr. Gary Warrenchak, the pride of the state legislature, as always. We certainly hope you've enjoyed being with us here today as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you.
Oh, my God.
Don't forget, join us 2 weeks from tonight at the air-conditioned Cobo Arena. Whoops, wrong one.
Terry, you are the best, man. You are the best.
So, Terry, do you have a story you want to share?
Well, aside from trying unsuccessfully all the time we did Bruiser Bedlam to actually get Bruiser to say something, you know, I thought, well, this is going to be great. You know, I'm not going to have to say a thing. Bruiser's just going to get on there and no, not quite. Yeah, I tried my best to set him up, ask him questions and to bring him into it and provide natural jumping in points for him. He just wasn't too talkative. Toward the end, he loosened up a little bit. What was his friend's name, Carter, that he used to talk about on the air?
You know what, Terry? That was in my head right now. That's absolutely unbelievable. You got him so loosened up and so willing to talk. He talked about one of the matches going on, and he said, "You know, Terry, that guy in the ring, he reminds me of my old high school buddy." Yep. And you said, "Who's that?" He goes, "Well, it was Peckerhead Boak."
Yep.
And I'm thinking, oh, this is never going to make it on TV, but we'll go roll with it.
Yeah.
It made it.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Bo, how about you? Do you have a story you want to tell us from your days in Bruiser Bedlam? Is Bo still there? It looks like
it was just a wonderful time. Oh, Bobo,
he's frozen.
I think he might be froze.
He still resents the haircut, I think.
He's holding a grudge.
They cut my hair, man. They stopped my hair.
Well, we'll see.
Is there any way I can mention something that's not
Toledo.
Really?
We was in Toledo, and Chris,
my heart.
I had a last man standing, and we was rousing up something. He go, "Jim," I said, "What?" He said, "Look over there in the crowd." I looked, and he go, "It's Jerry's girlfriend." When I turned, he knocked a mess out of me. I was still trying to find the big girl, but I never found her.
But yeah, let's
say Jerry and I were doing a street fight match. Jerry told me to slam him on this Cadillac he thought was his. You remember that, Jerry?
That was a Cadillac.
Yeah, Kim's, and I slammed Jerry on the Cadillac. The guy said, "Get out of my car." Jerry said, "Slam me again." So I slapped him again. The guy said, "Get out of my car."
And we're out in the parking lot. He was slamming me on the car. Yeah.
Well, let's wrap. Bo's coming in and out. He's reset. Yeah, let's wrap this up. Yeah. And Chris, you said you had something. That's what I'm going to do is got to open the floor for anybody. Any closing thoughts? And if you want to plug anything that you guys are currently up to, so it doesn't have to be Bedlam related now. If anybody wants get some closing thoughts.
I would love to do that. You know, first off, I've been blessed to be around professional wrestling for over 45 years. I'm still involved with professional wrestling, and I get to share that with a good friend of mine for over 40 years, and that's Terry Sullivan. As we work together on Championship International Wrestling, you can see us on Facebook, you can see us on YouTube, and you go to CIWProWrestling.com, and we are having a blast with this, and I think that it's something that's going to really make a mark in the next couple of years. So everybody keep an eye out for CIW Pro Wrestling.
Hey, all right.
Yeah. And, yeah, if you watch the show, it's definitely a lot of homage there to Bruiser Bedlam, isn't it, with the openings and the it definitely has that feel.
It's great. You know, it's I love to refer to it as the traditions of yesterday with the talent of today.
Well, I happen to know I'm friends with Phil Monahan, and I happen to know it doesn't come much more of a Bruiser Bedlam fan than Phil.
You're right.
Yeah, so.
Phil is a great guy to work with. He is so willing to talk with all of us and wants to hear our thoughts and everything. And I think that, that makes it just such an enjoyable place to be. I never thought I could be, this happy with wrestling again in my life. But thank you, Terry, for that opportunity. That's because of you.
All right. Anybody else have anybody else want to close out with anything? Anybody else want to plug anything?
Yeah, I do. Chris, I have a question to ask Chris Carter. Do you think that ICW would be, Phil Monahan Promotion would be better than Powerbomb?
You know, to be honest with you, Bo, I really didn't know much about Powerbomb. Okay. I wasn't involved with that. I mean, I saw a couple episodes of it. I thought it was pretty good. But I tell you, I honestly have this feeling in my gut that Phil is onto something, and I'm very happy to be part of it. And I think that with the people that are involved in it right now, this has a real good opportunity to go somewhere.
Okay. Well, I'll be seeing you on one of the shows there in Toledo.
I look forward to it. Don't beat me up.
No. That's my job.
Look out.
That's what I used to say. Chris Carter is very fortunate because most of us go through life saying, why am I here? What's my purpose in the universe? Chris Carter knows. He was put on this planet to be beaten up on a regular basis by Dr. Jerry Graham. He knows. He's found true happiness and contentment. Many of us never achieved that goal. That was, remember that interview from about 40 years ago. I don't know why that just came to me.
Oh my God. You blessed me in so many ways. I can't thank you enough. Thank you for all the beatings over the years and all the beatings I got from everything else.
Yes, we got many of them.
Yeah. The never-ending rivalry. The never-ending rivalry there.
Dave Dynasty, thank you for keeping WWA Bruiser Bedlam alive.
Yes. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Post some of those videos, and you give us some good memories, and thanks for pulling this together today. This is
I appreciate everybody coming and doing it. When I had this idea, I thought, man, this is kind of a big project. This is a big, big want here. And I think we pulled it off. I think it went pretty well. I think it's pretty entertaining.
We'd like to thank all the children and grandchildren who helped make all these guys.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Where would we be without them?
You're going to edit Turner out of most of this, right?
I got to thank you, Dave. You've been very kind to me on your podcast throughout the years. Keep my name alive, and I appreciate that so much. Thank you, man. You are the man.
I appreciate that. I'm fans of all of you guys. I appreciate everything you've done, and I'll forever say that, man, I will go to my grave trying to shine more light on Bruiser Bedlam and all you guys, because it's deserving.
We appreciate it. I want to say goodbye to all the guys. I enjoyed talking to all of you, each and every one of you. Brings back some good memories, and onward and upward.
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, Wrestling Fans International Association is back. That's right, the premier fan club association of the 1970s and 1980s has been revived and is back in business. Join today. It's free at thewfia.org. That's thewfia.org. You can also join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/WFIA1969.
All right, and we're back here on Wrestling Nostalgia. I am Dave Dynasty. Thank you to all those guys for joining me for that interview. I hope you enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. It was a big goal of mine. And again, it was ambitious, but I think we pulled it off, and I'm very proud of that interview and what we accomplished on this episode. Like I said, make sure you go check out all the WrestleCopia network of podcasts. And as you can see, things kind of got mixed up on my schedule, right? I announced last week that this episode would be the Mitsu Arakawa tribute issue, but things got shuffled around because I really wanted to get this Bruiser Bedlam interview out today. So coming up in the next few weeks, in no particular order, in undetermined order, there will be the tribute to Mitsu Arakawa with Richard Vajcic and Mike Arakawa. There will be the first AWA deep dive into May 1988 with George Shire. There will be a special first-time interview with one of the men that you heard in the Bruiser Bedlam reunion interview today, Cowboy Rex Bodie. There will be an interview with Wildcat Rendell Cooley and much, much more. So we got lots of great stuff coming up in the next few weeks. So make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for your support. It means all the world to me. So until next episode, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Menaker thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.